Right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go. This episode is sponsored by ByHeart. Hold on, y'all. With all this talk about making babies that we love to do, let's talk for a second about feeding those little miracles when they come. ByHeart is an infant nutrition company that started with a simple mission: make the best formula in the world. When chest feeding isn't an option, ByHeart's clinically proven, easy-to-digest infant formula is there for you. Their patented protein blend gets closest to breast milk. Plus, ByHeart is made with certified clean ingredients and no soy, corn syrup, GMOs, or palm oil. And it's the only U.S.-made infant formula with globally sourced ingredients to use organic, grass-fed whole milk, not skim. ByHeart also happens to be clinically proven for easier digestion, less spit up, and softer poops versus a leading infant formula, which, trust me, you're gonna want. So tell me, you're curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with code QueerFam for a limited time. Additional terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Zoller. We thank you, Zoller, for making our show a possibility. June, Pride Month, is what? Coming to a
close. It's coming to a close, y'all. We had a really good June. I'm taking it back to Emily's episode when Emily said it's like one of the best holidays for us queer folks. Like, the month of June really does mean so much to me now that I've really owned my queerness, I think.
Right.
June hits and I'm like, it's our month. It's ours. Here we go. And, you know, also, it doesn't hurt that, like, folks reach out to us because we have a podcast and they're like, we want to highlight you because it's June. I mean, I know what's happening, but it still doesn't hurt that that happens. We'd love to interview you about you.
Can I tell you why I love June so much besides Pride? Well, my birthday month is July. I want you all to know July, because I'm a Cancer. And I think that's important to understand in the greater ecosystem of our queerness.
Yes,
so June is important for Pride, but it's also a precursor to the greatest month of the year.
Oh, no.
Which, well, only up until like the 22nd, because then they're Leos, and Leos are a whole different story.
My brother's a Leo.
Oh.
Yeah. But here's another thing to look forward to for July. That? We were planning on ending the season at the end of June. This was going to be our final episode of the season, and we weren't going to be back till September. But we decided to extend it because we are having too much fun talking, and we have folks who have reached out to us and really want to share their stories, and we're going to be releasing more episodes through the month of July.
Boom, boom, boom. Yes. It's kind of like our birthday gift to every Cancer and non-Cancer in America and beyond.
And beyond, the whole world, really, the whole world and universe. So you guys, these extra episodes that are coming up in July, think of them as bonus episodes with E and I chatting.
Bonus birthday episodes.
Bonus birthday episodes. And we're going to have a guest here and there, and we just can't stop, won't stop, and we're having too much fun. So we thought we'd keep going.
Yeah. So send us questions, and you know, if you have something that you're interested in us talking about, let us know. Drop us a line at
ovariestalk@gmail.com or send us a DM.
Yeah, slide into our DMs. I learned that. You slide in. But I think that's something intimate when people slide into your DMs.
Yes, it is. Because I made the mistake of saying that earlier, and somebody was like, that's like sexual. So we don't want you to slide like that.
Sexually slide in our DMs.
We are married folks. We don't need all that. We just want some friends. But also, here's another thing. You can become a friend by becoming a Patreon member, and you can help us make this content for LGBTQ families. You can join our Patreon community. You're going to do it. Good thing. You're going to get bonus content. And what is the special thing there, E?
At the gestational carrier level, you'll get video interviews of most episodes. Guess what? Dropped a day early.
Yeah, they will be dropped a day earlier.
So head over to patreon.com/ovariestalk to join. Do it now.
Yeah, do it. Do it. Join our Patreon. Okay, we have to talk about our guests.
Oh, they were amazing.
Karita and Mia, they reached out to us because they wanted to tell their story. They have a really interesting
story. And it's a story I never heard. Mm-mm-mm. I never heard of
queer. They are a nomadic family.
Yeah. Y'all. A queer Black nomadic family, which that Black piece, knowing that they're traveling the globe as queer Black persons.
Right.
Lord have mercy. Lord have mercy.
And it sounds like it's gone well. They've been all over the world with their little baby. It's amazing.
Oh, are we giving it away?
Let's not tell too much. But things got really crazy for them when it was time to give birth. Karita and Mia faced some pretty blatant racism, homophobia. I mean,
you never know which one it is when you're Black. Is it racism? Is it homophobia? Is it genderism? You never know what kind of bologna and cheese you're getting and why.
Yeah, but the point is they faced some shit they shouldn't have faced. And they wanted to come here and talk about it. And we are so glad that they did. So without further ado, let's bring them in.
Tape.
I said, let's bring them in like they're here. Let's roll that tape. Helen, roll the tape.
Roll it.
Hi, Karita and Mia.
Hi.
Hi, Mia and Karita.
How are you?
We are doing great. How are you?
Pretty good. It's really wonderful to have you two on. Why don't we get right into your elevator pitch? You have 30 seconds to tell the listeners at home who you are, why you're here with us. It's so exciting.
Okay.
On your mark, get set, go.
So we are Mia and Karita from It's a Family Thing, and we are actually a nomadic family. We travel around the world full time with our 3-year-old son. We've been doing it for 2.5 years now. So that's who we are and kind of what we do. And we're here to talk about kind of my labor and delivery story and the difficulties of that in giving birth as a Black woman and how difficult it was to be heard. So that's our elevator pitch. Did I keep it under 30 seconds? I was trying.
You sure did.
You did perfect. Boop, 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 boop.
And you packed a lot in there. You really did.
Yeah.
So there's one thing I have never heard of that you just said. Well, I can get the gist of what it is, but you are a nomadic family. Can you tell us about that?
So we travel around the world full time. We don't have a permanent home. We live in Airbnbs. Right now we're in Tampa. We lived in Mexico for a year. We lived in Colombia. We were in Guatemala. We've been to Beijing. We've done a bunch of different things. And right now we're on a road trip. So we are in Florida. We're about to head to
Jacksonville.
Yeah, we're in Tampa. We're going to Jacksonville. What's after that? Charleston.
Yeah, and that's all Columbia, I have. I always forget what's next.
Asheville. A bunch of places.
I love Asheville.
Making our way up north to Ohio. And then preparing to head to Costa Rica this fall.
What?
Wow.
What? Yeah. I'm so jealous. Okay. Wait, what?
I want to do this. My next question is, you're Black.
Yes.
I'm Black.
I was thinking yes.
Mm-hmm. You were thinking it too? Mm-hmm. Well, talk to us about that, because to me, I've heard of nomadic living. Mm-hmm. I just haven't heard of it with a queer Black female family.
Absolutely. We are literally the only one.
You're the only one?
Yes. We are the literally the only ones. We kind of started it because we had this idea. We wanted to travel full time and there were no Black people, first off. And then there were no two mom families. So we kind of just went for it and said, you know what, let's do it after having our son. And we sold everything. We lived in a hotel. And then after we left the hotel, we started traveling. Well, the pandemic hit and we got stranded in Colorado. And then after we left Colorado, we ended up in Ohio. From Ohio, we moved to Mexico. We lived in Mexico for a year and loved it. Our son went to preschool there. They love him. They still text us even now. They love him. Love him. Oh my gosh, it's ridiculous. He speaks Spanish. It was an amazing experience. And they really accepted us, which was surprising.
Yeah, I never felt
But our little community was beautiful and they were so nice to us and they offered to help. And
what part of Mexico?
We were in Playa del Carmen.
Okay. I've been hearing things like there's a community.
Yeah, there's an expat
Black and Black gay communities.
It's a little bit different for us because we have a 3-year-old. So we don't, our travel is a little bit different from people who don't travel with a little one. But yeah, we enjoyed Guatemala. So
I love you. I want to do it. Can you call my wife and talk to her? I didn't even think that it could be safe for us.
Yeah. Honestly, it was safer. At the time we left August 2020. So it was after the George Floyd incident. And it was so freeing. The police and military ride down the streets on Humvees with M16s. And I've never batted an eye. It never bothered me ever. But in the US, I see a police car and I immediately get anxious.
Wow.
The drastic difference. Of course, there's some microaggressions, but I mean, that's just what it is. But in terms of feeling safe, I definitely felt a lot safer there. Definitely.
Wow. That's fantastic.
So a little plug for us. We have a family travel blog. So go check it out.
Yeah. It's called It's a Family Thing, right?
It's a Family Thing. Yes.
With a Z.
With a Z for the URL.
Okay.
But if you Google with the S, it'll show up too. But yeah, it's our travel blog and we write about our travels and we have fun.
I love it. Let's get into kind of your
baby
story.
Making.
Yeah, your baby making. Can we all talk about the baby making?
How long have y'all been together first is my question.
We don't know.
Stop.
We don't know. Okay, once you hear how we met, you'll realize why we don't know.
Do I want to tell them how we met?
Well, we don't know how we met.
We don't know that either. But
we know how we met. We don't know when we met.
Back in the day when we were in high school, we weren't necessarily like good friends, but we weren't. No, we just said hi to each other, checked on each other. You went to college and then we kind of like chit-chatted every now and again on like Facebook. We were like creepy towards each other.
Yeah. Now one day randomly, I was 19 years old and I was drunk and I showed up at her house and we just hung out. It was just random.
Yeah.
And then I moved to California and moved on, lived my life, got married and everything. Bought a house.
You got married?
Yeah, not to me. That wasn't me. And
to someone
else. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So you guys
were started a whole life. And then we randomly reconnected, got divorced. And then we randomly reconnected in 2017.
Yeah.
And we've literally been together ever since.
Yeah.
Wow. And so did you guys both know you were gay in high school?
I knew in high school.
I'm not sure. I don't remember.
Oh, I knew in high school.
So you reconnect. You're together for the rest of eternity. And then where does baby enter?
Well, what was crazy is we reconnected and I was living in California. She was living in Ohio. Mm-hmm. So she came out to California, in May? And then you came out in June again in 2017. Mm-hmm. And then you came out in July. And then she moved in August 2017.
You see how thirsty I was?
I love it.
And then we were engaged in October and married by December.
Yeah, crazy.
It was meant to be.
Just when you know, you know.
You know.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah,
it's crazy.
Mm-hmm. We went on a honeymoon and then like a week later or 2 weeks later?
2 weeks later, yeah, we had the IUI.
Boom.
Whoa. Dang.
You know you got her pregnant on that honeymoon. That's what happened. You knocked her up on that honeymoon. Tell the truth.
What was the conversation around having a baby? I mean, when did that conversation start?
Well, that started back when we already said from the very beginning, we both wanted to have kids. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about everything, literally put everything on the table in the very beginning.
As you do.
Absolutely
lesbians.
Everything.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Two is my limit.
Yeah. Like I want two and this.
Two should be everybody's limit. I'm just saying that.
No shade. No shade.
No shade. No shade.
So we actually tried at home at first in October, November, December-ish. Yeah. Around that time, we tried at home and it was unsuccessful. Mm-hmm. With, so we decided.
With donor sperm?
Yes, with frozen donor sperm.
From like a bank?
Yeah. So we went to a bank and we were both set on, people can't tell, but she's half Korean. Mm-hmm. She speaks Korean. Her family's Korean. So we were set on a Korean donor. Uh-huh. And then when we were unsuccessful, Can I interrupt?
No. Go ahead, because I was going to interrupt.
Wait, and then I want to hear what you were going to interrupt with. But I want to know, was it difficult to find a Korean donor at the sperm bank?
It's easier to find a Korean
it's
donor.
It's easier a black Korean donor. Than it is for a black, donor.
Really? Yeah.
It's a lot easier to find a Korean
donor. Wow.
Yeah. I know it's hard to find a black donor, but I had no idea that. I know nothing about Korean donors, to be honest. So,
yeah.
That's a first.
We had a good like five, to five to choose from. That was from one bank though.
Hi, I'm Trevor Campbell and you made me queer. Oh, I never get tired of saying that. I'm so excited because my podcast, You Made Me Queer, is back for its second season. Every episode, I invite a hilarious LGBTQIA plus guest to point the finger of blame at who and or what made them queer. And I've had some very vindictive guests, like the great Canadian baking show's Colin Asuncion.
She's like, FYI, I'm the only one here who knows how to read.
CBC's Because News host, Gavin Crawford.
Proudly wandering around me like, yeah, it's our gang, the Thoroughly Modern Millies.
The Bedpost Podcast's Aaron Pym.
Early Disney, they were drawing women with dump truck asses.
RuPaul's Drag Race's Jinx Monsoon.
I remember being a little child and thinking, I would do that.
CBC's Chosen Family co-host, Trina Winter.
Being an old soul means you're a deeply traumatized person.
And welcome to The Dollhouse and The Princess Diaries, Heather Matarazzo.
I mean, if he had a dick, he could suck it.
New episodes are released every other Thursday on the Sonar Network. So put on your best powdered wig or whatever jury members wear nowadays and stop on by our House of Justice, where the AC is usually broken and the category is always Red Hot Queer Retribution. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, remember, we're here, we're queer, and it's your fault.
Where are you when you decide, you know what, we're going to start doing IUIs? What was that conversation?
Yes.
When it was time. Okay. Not the initial we're going to be together moment of we're going to have babies, but that moment when you're like, we're going to start paying for it. And how did that go?
She said she would take one for the team.
Yes.
Those were her exact words.
To carry?
That's what but I said.
Yeah. Yes. The funny thing is she was like, I mean, I felt like it was going to be like first take. You know how you just have that gut feeling? Mm-hmm. I think she didn't have that gut feeling.
No, I absolutely thought it was not going to be successful at all. That's why I volunteered to do it. I'll say I tried.
Tricked
to be
a team
player. To be like, you know what? I'll say I tried. And then when it doesn't work, I can at least say I tried. And then it worked. And I was like,
damn,
I don't want to curse, but it was
You can curse.
It was an old man moment for
really?
Me.
So you weren't expecting that.
Mm-mm. No. Well, you know what's crazy is we had a phenomenal doctor. He was so amazing in Orange County, California. And he was phenomenal. So we go and, you know, I got to pee on a stick and see when I'm ovulating. And the day I end up ovulating was the anniversary of my grandma's death.
Mm.
And I ended up having, I went to go do the IUI the next day, but it wasn't supposed to be for 3 days. So it was pushed up 3 days. So I was just like, man, that's crazy how that worked out.
And I was
then
like, yeah, she's
after,
about to get
literally right after, I was like, oh my God, I think that worked. I think I'm going to end up being
pregnant.
Isn't
that the weirdest feeling though? When you're like, oh my God, I could have a baby inside of me right now. And I just had sperm inside of me as well, which is also not.
Which was horrible to think about. It was terrible to think about. And I was really taking one for the team. Oh my gosh, it was so horrible to think about.
So
like,
wait,
oh my God.
Did neither one of you really want to carry?
Oh, I would.
Oh, she wanted to carry.
Oh, how come you took one for the team, Karita?
Well, because we tried at home and it was unsuccessful. And I was like, well,
Mia.
I'll give her a break. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Oh, I'll give her a break and I'll say I'll try to do it. And then we'll come back again next month and we'll try and she'll do it. And I was not expecting.
Yeah, I mean, it was It was emotional. So I think she was just trying to.
It was emotional. Yeah. You know how emotional the process is, and you get your hopes up, and it's the 2 weeks, and you know, I can forget about it, and I can go on and think, you know, and it was a lot.
Yeah.
You got pregnant on the first shot. Congratulations.
On the first IUI.
On the first IUI.
Right.
But Mia, how did you feel?
With her getting pregnant?
Yeah.
I was fine.
Oh, I was a jealous nightmare. No. I was a jealous nightmare during my time.
I was more so like nervous because I knew deep down inside that that's not something that she wanted to do. And I knew that she had worked hard on this sexy body and she was going to be upset about that.
I was in the army at the time. I had some nice abs popping.
Oh, no.
I was wearing a 31 waist. It was awesome.
You were rocking it.
Man.
Boom, here comes
I ain't been baby. Able to wear them clothes since.
So you didn't have any ill feelings about now you're going to be the non-bio mom, Mia?
No, I mean, I was nervous that we wouldn't bond, but that's a whole conversation. But
yeah, she was so scared about that. I was just like, look, if anybody's not going to bond, it's going to be me because like I'm not. She's like a baby magnet or toddler, like a kid magnet. I swear. She was a preschool teacher and every random little kid just walk up to her and start talking to her or like hold her hand or just random kids. I'm like, who are these kids just walking with you? So I was just like, if anybody's going to have a hard time, it's definitely going to be me.
But that is a legit fear, that fear of not bonding with the child because you're not genetically related. And then we all our families, many of us go through this, and then the baby comes and then we all realize very quickly, oh, no, I'm bonded. We're good. We're good. But
oh, my God.
Our relationship is strong.
Mommy. Mommy. All day.
So how was the pregnancy? There's a story.
We both took a deep breath. It was rough. The pregnancy was rough. Okay, there's several reasons why. First one being, we were in California by ourselves. We didn't have any family there. I moved to California in 2011, 2012 to be with my ex-wife at the time. And I had bought a house and created a whole life out there. So I wasn't moving back to Ohio. So that was the first thing that was hard because we didn't have anyone. And the second thing being the person, so my grandma, I grew up with my grandma and I had a really close relationship with her and she passed away. And that was hard for me.
Very sorry. Yeah.
I didn't have anyone. I don't have a relationship with my mom. I haven't talked to my mom in, God, 7 years, six, 7 years. So I don't have a relationship with her. My family isn't really close since my grandma passed away. So it was difficult because I felt like I was by myself. Even though she was phenomenal, not having that was hurtful. And at the time, I don't think I realized it because at the time I felt like, oh, well, it doesn't matter. But looking back on it, it mattered. And being able to have someone mattered, you know, someone outside of just your partner, having that support from family or feeling loved or feeling people being happy that you're bringing a kid, because absolutely no one ever, I never, ever, ever thought I would ever have a kid ever.
I got
the juice. Did you hear that?
Never. Everybody was like, she what? With a baby? Not a puppy? Like, y'all not getting a new puppy? Y'all having
Mia
a,
knows
having a
why.
Kid?
Mia knows why. Hey, I see you. Oh, yes.
If you guys can see the looks Mia is giving the camera right now.
Back to the subject at hand. Listen, so the pregnancy was tough.
Yeah.
For multiple reasons for me. I think a lot of healing needed to happen. And when you're pregnant, your hormones are all over the place. So, she was very mean, but I still loved her. Understanding and knowing that it was some stuff that needed to happen beforehand, but it just didn't happen in that life. Her hormones were all over the place, and then not having a support system was tough for both of us. So,
And I was working on a house. We were fixing up our house.
We're
I was
crazy.
Like putting down baseboards. Seriously, I was putting down floors.
No, you're just lesbians. Cleaning. You're lesbians. Yeah.
We were putting down, like, we were moving popcorn ceiling.
Yeah, as you that. Do. As you do.
Yeah. That's what we do.
As you do. So you weren't prepared for the range of emotions that you felt during pregnancy.
Yeah. The lack of control for me.
First lesson in parenting, right?
The lack of control. I hated just having all these weird feelings and like, what the hell? And just not feeling like myself. I think that was the most frustrating thing is not being able to feel like myself.
And not being able to take it out and be like, pause and come back to it. Because there had a point for me at 45, I realized I was done. But I wanted the experience, but then I didn't want the baby. Like, I just wanted to have the experience so I could say I did it, because that's what, you know, yeah. I thought my body was supposed to do. But anyway, how was labor?
Where do we start? Let's just start when we get in there, because she has this long food story. It's unnecessary. So
because I was pissed off.
I want to hear
the
it.
The food part is important because people need to know.
Okay, just make it quick, though.
Because, okay, so I knew you couldn't eat. Once you go into labor, blah, 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 you can't eat. So I had planned I was going to have Chinese food. I was going to have chicken and broccoli. It was a whole thing. I had already had my meal set up. And I went into labor a month early. And I was so pissed off because it was 9 o'clock at night. The Chinese place was closed. And I was pissed.
I love this story so much.
Oh my God. I was so angry.
Is it okay to eat once the contractions start?
Yeah, but once you get to the hospital, they will not let you eat.
Right.
Yeah. But you got to eat before you get to the hospital. Once you get there, they will not let you eat anything. It's all liquid.
But we skipped over something very important. You just said you went into labor a month early.
I was going to start there. Yeah. But I wanted her to get that out of her system.
Okay.
First. Okay. So,
because it's very important and people need to know you need to have your food options and your food game ready.
Yeah.
So, do you want to tell your water bug story?
Yeah, because I was sleeping on a couch because our bed was high at the time and it was too much to keep getting up and down to go pee constantly throughout the night. So I slept on a couch and I went to the bathroom and I looked at a toilet and I said, that doesn't look right. So I called her name and I always talk about it because she had such an attitude with me because I was calling her. It wasn't even late. It was like 9:45. It was like 3 a.m. It was like 9 o'clock. And I was like, babe, what? She was sick of me by this point. And I was like, something doesn't look right. And she came in the bathroom and I was like, I think my water broke. I don't know.
Perfect placement.
And we called the doctor.
You were how many weeks? You were 36?
I was 36 weeks.
36 weeks.
So is that the safe zone?
Safe is 38. At 36, he's premature.
Okay.
Yeah. At 36 weeks, yeah, he's premature. And this was a Saturday. I had just got out the hospital that Friday because my doctor thought I had preeclampsia. He was worried about my blood pressure. Mm. So they had just released me from the hospital the day before.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went into late. My water broke. And this is what they don't tell you. You think your water breaks and that's it. But no, it just keep coming.
It trickles. It just keeps trickling out.
It's just the worst.
It's not a
yes.
And done.
No.
It trickles. So what happened was after I went to the bathroom, she called a doctor. Everybody confirmed I was in labor and I sat in the shower for an hour. They told me to come to the hospital and I just sat down in the shower.
I think when she was in the shower, I caught multiple times. I mean, at that point, he was just like, hello, Mia, you know?
Because it's scary. You're at 36 weeks.
I was super nervous. Yeah. And she was just in the shower chilling.
Yeah. I wouldn't leave the shower because I was in a serious state of denial. Like, I just sat in the shower.
Didn't you want to just rush to the hospital though?
No. I sat in the shower for like an hour.
I had to like put my Gerverse on, like, let's go. Like, we got to go. I mean, I had to pack our bags, but that's another.
And you know, part of it was I didn't want to put on the Depends because I didn't know the trickle was happening and she had bought me. But you know what? Them things is comfortable. If anybody, they are comfortable. I'm telling you. And if you got a little extra back there, because I do, you know, got a little extra in your behind because you eat cornbread and stuff, biscuits.
Back to the food.
They are comfortable and they are good enough, you know, because you know them net panties they give you at the hospital don't really cover you if you got a butt. So you got to get some Depends. Them things.
This is good advice.
Oof. This is good
advice. It's so comfortable. And you don't feel anything. You don't feel wet or anything.
I was shocked by, like, some people have, like, a really slow trickle when their water breaks. Like, my wife's was, like, she was barely noticeable. She didn't even realize. Mm-hmm. Mine was, like, a big gush in the beginning. And then, this is a lot of information, guys, but it's helpful. My dog just walked in. There's construction happening outside all of a sudden. I mean, come on. And mine was a big gush in the beginning, and then it trickled for hours. Hours.
When y'all say trickle, do you mean, like, unconscious,
like
you're not doing anything, or like you got to keep going to the bathroom?
No, it's just coming out.
You're not doing anything. It's just coming out. Ew. You're literally not doing anything. It's just, I'm telling you, that's why you need a Depends joint. She had got me some brief versions and they were so comfortable and I wore those.
And you're in the shower sitting there. You don't want to move. Is it because of the idea that it'll have to be pushed out?
Yes. You know what I told her? I was like, you know what? I'm going to have a C-section. I had made up my mind. I need to have a C-section because I need this to happen. I need them to cut because I can't push. I can't have anything to do with pushing or anything coming out of my vaginal region. I just can't handle it. And plus, my doctor said he thought I was going to have a C-section because my pelvic wall or something, he said it was very narrow. So he didn't think I was going to be able to push him out anyway. And he has sat so low my whole pregnancy. Mm-hmm. He didn't think I was going to be able to push. I was just like, okay, I can live with C-section.
But what about pushing? Was it scary, or you just didn't want anything to do with that whole experience?
I didn't want anything to do with the whole experience. Yeah. Like, because here's the thing. I've never had sex with a man my whole life. Mm-hmm. Never.
Gold star. So
that's why I didn't want to have nothing to do with baby coming out that baby way. Going in. I was scared to push. Right. Baby going in that way. Anything. So I was just scared out of my mind. And I was scared of the labor. I thought it was going to be the most painful, horrific thing in my life. And it wasn't.
Oh,
surprisingly. Because I'm a big baby.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I was in labor for a long time.
Did you get your C? Like forever.
No, my water broke on November 10th that night. So we go to the hospital and I'm in labor and he wasn't born until November 13th. Whoa. I'm in labor that whole time.
That's a long time.
It was a very long time. I'm surprised they let me stay in labor that long.
Especially and since he was
so early. Yeah, I'm surprised.
Today's episode is sponsored by Zoller. Jay, I'll have you know, Aaron has started popping the pills.
Uh-oh. Oh, the Zoller pills.
The Zoller prenatals? Prenatals, yes.
I love that. Okay, guys, everybody at home, Zoller offers a most complete and comprehensive prenatal vitamin, which includes 300 milligrams of DHA, the active form of folate, bioactive B vitamins, chromium, lutein, and a whole lot more. And that is all very important stuff. And E and Aaron are using it to make an ovaries tuck baby.
Oh my God. Oh yes. I feel warm flushes happening when that gets said. Aaron has them and is ready to go. Now we just have to figure out all the logistics and do it. Yes.
Yeah. As you do as a queer family, but this is very exciting and we're going to make a baby.
Yes. And I'll join the Tooser Club. Is it the Tooser Club? I love that you're just a part of this and saying that we're making a baby because I'm going to lean on you tremendously. So,
okay, I'll be there maybe sometimes. No, you know, no. it's no joke, those two kids. But with Zoller Prenatal, you can rest assured that you're providing you and your baby with the best that you deserve.
And they have an offer that is exclusively for If These Ovaries Could Talk fans. I'm sure there are some of you out there that are in this baby making process, right? Of course. So just use code PREDHA25, that's PREDHA25 on Zoller Prenatal DHA at Amazon.com checkout for 25% off your purchase.
Yes, yes. We are making so many babies right here, right now.
Right now.
You're going to use code PREDHA25 on Zoller Prenatal DHA, and that's spelled ZAHLER, at Amazon.com checkout for 25% off your purchase. This is very exciting.
Very.
Make the babies.
Make them.
So walk us through when you get to the hospital and what happened once you got to the hospital.
So we get to the hospital and we go up and it wasn't that bad. My contractions weren't bad. I was just hanging out. I was trying to convince them to let me go home because I was in denial. They said, your water broke. You can't leave here without a baby. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or you just can't leave here pregnant. Right. Whatever the outcome is, you can't leave. We can't let you leave, basically.
Mm. Okay, but the juicy part of this is she had to get an epidural, which was a trying time for me. And I mean that, like, they kept messing up.
I didn't get an epidural until like after it was like 15, 16 hours. Yeah. Then I got the epidural because I was trying to go to sleep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The contractions were annoying. They weren't hurtful. They were super annoying.
Okay.
Was it a vein? I don't know what it was, but I feel like it was two different people in there and they were.
Yeah. They poked me like 4 or 5 times. Oh, they just couldn't get it.
Oh my God. That's the worst. I would have fainted.
Does the epidural
in your back?
I know, but I guess
it's in your back. Yeah.
They can't miss. I mean, how do you miss and have to repeat?
Because you got to be very precise with it. And then if you're not precise, you got to take it out and do it. Actually didn't bother me that much. I wouldn't bother. Needles don't bother me. And then since it's in the back, I couldn't see it. So it didn't bother me. It didn't anything. This whole time I'm in labor and I think everything is fine, but that's not the case.
Apparently. What's going on? Why? What's going on?
No. So I don't even know where to start. First, I was super emotional already because I was thinking if he's early and y'all just reaching in there doing stuff, like we need to get him out, all these little germs. They already told us that the NICU team was ready. They told me that he was going to weigh 3 pounds and that his lungs weren't going to be developed. And then they asked me to come in the hallway. I go out there and this lady was just like, oh, we're running all these tests. So the first thing she said to me was, like, you might want to get prepared to leave the hospital without a baby and your wife. And I was like, wait, what's she saying?
How are they going to say it like that?
She was new. I cried. I got it together.
Yeah, we had a nurse resident. We did have a nurse resident. So you know what's crazy? I worked for the hospital we were at the time. I worked in the HR department, which was interesting.
So I called my grandma and she was like, I think that you should figure out what's going on first before you go and tell her. Like, he's already early. You're probably panicking. And you just got to keep your energy together.
I had no idea. I was just too busy being hangry. I had no clue.
Yeah. So I was in that moment. And then I felt like we weren't heard because her doctor wasn't available at the time. So he was running messages through another doctor. And I feel like she wasn't taking action on things that he told her to do. So that was a huge thing. So then they gave her Pitocin and I'm like, okay, well,
stopped my labor.
Yep.
Stopped your labor.
Yeah.
Stopped. Like, I came in at 4 centimeters. So, okay, let's get this thing popping. They gave me Pitocin, nothing for a full day. Nothing.
Wow.
A full day.
And the doctor, a full day. I went into labor on the 10th. I didn't start pushing until the morning of the 13th.
Is that legal?
What were they telling you through all this?
So my doctor had left. He prescribed some medicine that night before he left that they never gave me.
Oh.
So when he came back the next morning, he gave me the medicine and I was ready to push in 45 minutes.
Oh.
So I had been left in labor and a doctor hadn't seen me for an entire day.
So they just left you in the room and no doctor was coming to check on you?
No, we saw a doctor one time until my doctor got back.
And she was 3 days.
She was not nice.
Are you all just,
in what way was she not nice?
She came and she introduced herself and it wasn't clear. And then she said a few words and then she walked out.
Then she walked away and we never saw her again.
Didn't ask how you're doing, how you feeling.
No, we literally, she came in, introduced herself and we never seen her again. Ever. We never saw her again.
I'm sorry. I know this. I'm not the one you were hoping to see. You know, like that standard.
After introducing herself, she never read that script. Saw her again.
She never read
that script. She never read that script to you guys.
No.
And then you didn't see her. Mm-hmm. So you were getting checked up on by some nurses every once in a while.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They came in and the nurses were really good.
Yeah.
We had really great, the nighttime nurses were phenomenal. But yeah, they would come in, they would check on me, they would check to see how I was dilated. And then I started using the peanut ball, which was awesome. But yeah, no one ever, and we were asking about the medicine. We're like, you know, the doctor prescribed medication and they would say, oh, okay, well, let me go ask the doctor who's here and nothing.
Right. What? So I am a strong woman. So I'm going to ask questions, but nothing is happening. So I started like calling people that I know that was like nurses and like asking questions. And, you know, I got like into a place of like, I'm going to just go scroll through my Facebook. Like, I need to find a couple extra nurses that I ain't talked to in 15 years because like I have questions. And then I was still nervous and emotional because I was still waiting for them to tell me information about her health.
And you're literally in a hospital and you are scrolling through your Facebook old friends to find a nurse to ask questions to.
Yeah.
What in the actual...
There was never any clear answer.
Yeah,
and it wasn't anything about terminology. I'm a smart enough woman to go research whatever information that you gave me.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, well, if I don't know, then I'll just figure it out. But no, I just feel like everybody was beating around the bush.
And it got to a point where since I worked for the hospital, I knew the director of the OB department. I said, okay, well, we need to contact the director because this is getting a little
because you're just being ignored and you're 4 weeks premature. You should be getting extra attention.
Extra. Did they have the strap around you, the monitor and all that other stuff hooked up? So then
we
was,
asked
there was
about it.
Okay. So the baby was
fine. They were monitoring
fine.
The baby. They were saying the baby was okay. He wasn't in distress.
Okay.
That was the big thing. He wasn't in distress. But I was surprised they let me be in labor for so long. That's a long time to be in labor.
Crazy.
Yeah.
It's a very long time to be in labor. But by that point, I was too scared to get a C-section. Right. I talked all that big game and I was like, yeah, I'll push.
Well, you know what? I just pulled up this thing on the CDC and I just want to read for 1 second. Black women are 3 times more likely to die from pregnancy related causes than white women. Multiple factors contribute to these disparities, such as variation in quality health care, underlying chronic condition, structural racism. I don't know how we avoid that. And implicit bias. Social determinants of health prevent many people from racial and ethnic minority groups from having fair opportunities. Economically, physically, emotionally. So this is 3 times more likely. I know in Jersey right now, we're having an epidemic. I don't know if that's how you say it. But the mortality rate for Black women in this state has skyrocketed so high. Like it's a statewide emergency right now. So I'm sorry that you went through some stuff. But hopefully this moment we're having and the more we get the word out, we can, because I can't imagine it's probably worse for Black lesbian or queer people having babies. So if the disparity is, you know, 3 times for Black heterosexuals, what is it for Black queer?
Right. There's no study done on that.
They
I'm
don't
sure.
study us.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
And I thought I worked for the hospital. This should be awesome.
Right.
That's what
you
my
should be
thinking
treated
was.
Like a queen.
Right. And this should be awesome. Yeah. It was rough. And so after my doctor gets back and, you know, he's taking care of me. And you know what's crazy? We believe they told him that we refused the medication. But nobody came to administer
they
anything.
They told him you refused it?
Yes, because he came back and he said, "What? Why didn't you take it?" And I said, "What are you talking about? Nobody ever came back to bring me anything." And he said, "Well, I ordered it." I said, "Well, no one ever came. No one brought medicine. We asked. People said they were going to check and no one ever came back."
Problem.
And so he took care of it. What? And like 30 minutes later, I was pushing.
He was amazing. Though.
He was a phenomenal OBGYN.
He was phenomenal, but he wasn't there.
Yeah.
So the doctor finally comes in. You finally get to push and the baby comes out.
And he comes out and I only pushed for 30 minutes. Thank God. Because it is the hardest thing you've ever had to do in your life. I couldn't imagine if I had to keep pushing that I would have kept doing it.
I knew
it was rough. So I pushed and he came out and he came out screaming.
Yeah.
Because that's what we were afraid of is that his lungs weren't developed.
Right.
So this was he was born on a Tuesday or something. And that Thursday I had just had a doctor's appointment. The doctor said, "Oh, he's about 3-4 pounds. He was 6 pounds, 11 ounces when he was born.
That's bigger than my son was full term.
Wow.
He's a big dude. Yes.
Wow. Can you imagine if you had gone full term?
That's what I said. I was like, man, you would have been a monster if I would have gone full term. Oh my goodness. But he came out screaming.
So he was fine.
The labor just was like, pleh! It was just, pleh! I don't know why I keep doing that sound, but it
what
just
time was he born within an
8:03.
Yeah. My birthday is March 8th. And I was like, oh, he was made for me.
8:03 a.m. He was born. Aww. And he was perfectly fine. The NICU team, they took him, but in the room. And they evaluated him and they said he was perfectly fine.
That's so he didn't really have great. To stay there.
No. Nope.
But even them just being in the room was so scary for
me. It was scary because it was a team. It was like 4 people. They had the whole thing.
Because they're ready
and
to
they're
take
just
whatever
waiting
action
to
they
take
need
the baby.
To take.
Yeah.
Did you get to cut the cord since all of that was happening?
Yeah, you
can record. Okay. Oh, I thought you were talking about, I was like, that's pretty wild.
No, Mia, did you?
I just did all the hard work.
Okay, so the baby comes and he's healthy. And so then what happens? Mm-hmm. What happens with the rest of your stay in the hospital? Like, do they still ignore you?
No, from there, it was pretty good.
It was a whole different set of people.
You move from labor to recovery and you're in a completely separate, you're on the same floor, but you move to a separate side and it's a separate set of nurses. And they were awesome.
Yeah.
They were really good.
That's great.
Well, so let's get back to E's question from earlier. Are you taking action? Like, have you spoken to them about the way you were treated in the hospital?
No,
not that you have to.
Yeah, at the time I was worried because it was my job, you know, so that adds a level of complication.
Right.
We talked about it. And after I gave birth, I started having really bad chest pain.
So I think that kind of like moved
that, that kind of moved everything out of the way. And we were concerned because in college, I had a really close friend and she had just given birth to her son and she was having chest pains and she died when her son was 3 weeks old with her baby in her arms at 21.
Oh my God.
And she went to the hospital several times and they told her she was fine and she cardiac arrest at 21. So I was kind of freaking out because my pregnancy, I was, I had high blood pressure and I have a history. My family has a history of heart disease. So I was freaking out. So we were trying to get that taken care of and nobody was really listening when I'm saying, you know, I'm having chest pains. I'm 29 at the time, 29, I'm 29 years old and I'm having chest pains. Like it has, it stops me in my tracks and I have to stop what I'm doing because it hurts. So that kind of took over everything because I was scared and I was breastfeeding. I just felt like I couldn't get anybody to listen to me. And she had to convince me like, no, you need to tell your doctor. He needs to get you in with a cardiologist. So he gets me referred to a cardiologist. Then insurance wouldn't let me go.
Oh my God.
They were saying I was too young and I didn't need it. So that was, it was frustrating. And I had to get my doctor to convince the insurance company to get me into the cardiologist because they said it wasn't an emergency and they didn't have me scheduled for what, 3-4 months?
Right.
Oh my God. Can you imagine?
Yeah. I was freaking out. So that that kind of took over everything for us because in the back of my mind, I'm thinking about what happened to my friend and she died. And I just couldn't imagine having a baby. He was what, 4 months at the 4 months at the time. And
yeah,
that must have been being terrifying. Gone.
Like that. I was so scared.
Yeah,
I was so scared.
And once again, you were not being taken seriously and you were not being listened to.
And that's a theme in the Black community. We go to the doctors and our pain isn't taken seriously. I go for a lot of different things. I get shots in my knees. Come to find out they can put a number on there. I did not know. I'm just getting this big needle in my knee. So now I know that you can have a number. Why? Because my mother does research, right? And we have to research everything.
We have to,
way far past trusting the doctors because they they don't listen
to become a doctor.
Basically.
You basically have to. What I started doing and making a conscious effort is asking them, okay, if you're refusing, make a document in my file saying you're refusing to XYZ. I want to make that noted. So that way something happens, you haven't noted that you told your doctor. And then that way they start taking action.
Right.
Oh, that's smart.
You can record someone in this day and age without their permission. So what I do now is when I go into important doctor's offices, sometimes I'll tell them because I like them and I trust what they're doing. But sometimes I don't. One, because it helps me remember what the hell was said because I leave and I'm like, what'd they say? Right. So that helps me to understand and be able to look over things because they go fast, even when I slow them down. So having the recording helps. Everybody in America, record your doctor's visits.
My mom records every single doctor's visit and then she sends it to me.
But it's sad to have to feel like you have to.
It is. It is.
It's sad. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And to think about your position where you're scared and, you know, why won't anybody help me? I'm not asking. I'm asking to, you know, go to a cardiologist, see what's going on. Here's my family history. I've had, you know, uncles die of heart attack, literally dropped dead of heart attacks. So I wanted to, what can I do to make sure I'm okay? I just had a baby. So my body's going through all these things. And you know what the answer was? They put me on a treadmill. And I was like, dude, I just had a baby. I can't get on a treadmill and run. But he seemed annoyed by me.
Right.
He seemed really annoyed by me.
But you get paid to think of these things.
Right.
I don't, why am I trying to tell you how to do your job?
Right. I'm so sorry. I'm so
sorry. It's been the norm, though. That's the sad part. It's been the norm. Since you grew up, you've known this. You've had, we've had to pay. This is just a part of the fabric of being Black in this country. In my experience.
Even though she worked there, I was still nervous.
Yeah.
I was still nervous. And like, that was a couple of times. I was like, are you her mom? Like, first of all, don't do that. Right. I'm not her mom.
You don't look
you need
like
to
her
have
mom.
Somebody. You need to have somebody there with you. Because if she was not there with me, I don't think I would have been able. No one would have listened to me. No one would have. She was absolutely the voice that I needed because I didn't have any support from anybody else. I didn't have any help. But no one else was there. It was literally just the two of us.
And it's crazy. And I, this is a message to all people, part of the queer community. Find your family and keep them.
Chosen family. Yeah. Right.
Because I call family, like biological family on both sides. And listen, like I'm telling them, I'm crying. Like I got to hurry up and get it together. I only got a few minutes because I need to get back in there with her. But like, they're saying that like, she might not walk out of here. And it's either like, I lose both of them or I lose one of them. And no one came. No one looked up flights. No one said, I'm on my way. People were drivable.
Oh my God.
And one came. And I was like, this is insane.
Yeah. You were literally alone.
And this is why we have to find our own communities and foster that family, because too many times our biological families are not there for us the way they should be in the first place. Sometimes it's because they can't. But also what we create is so much stronger 9 times out of 10.
Right.
So imagine if we had 3 or 4 people like, hey, where's we haven't seen a doctor. We haven't seen a doctor. We have, you know, if we had that support that other people have. And that was heartbreaking. Yeah, it was heartbreaking.
Yeah. And did you feel any microaggressions because you were queer as well? Or do you think it was mainly because of the color of your skin?
Well, asking if that's your mom, that's a microaggression, because they are very clearly not. Too. Like,
no. Yeah.
So you didn't read none of the paperwork because everything is there. Yeah. Like all of our business is right there.
Well, they never do their due diligence and read up on who you are. Why would they do that? Right. You'd think.
And I think also part of it is a generational difference, because the nurses we had were older, with the exception of a couple, but we had older nurses.
Like they should have retired 10 years ago.
Oh, the ones that say that's your friend.
Yeah, we had to keep saying, you know, like we're married. And luckily, well, for me, I knew I wanted to live in California. But if I ever had a kid, I wanted it to be in California, to at least have the kid in California, because I knew it would be easier in terms of adoption.
Right.
Or being able to sign birth certificate.
Oh, you mean like second parent adoption?
I wanted it to be in California because I knew it wouldn't be a hassle.
Right.
So that was something that was important for us. For me, at least.
Did you do all of that stuff once your sweet, precious baby boy is here?
Yeah. We did the second parent adoption. And for us, it was super simple. It cost us, $50 and took 2 weeks.
I've heard California has really changed things up and made it super easy. I should have never left California.
Yeah, we paid $1,200 and it took 3 weeks.
Oh, it took me a little couple of years because I don't like paperwork.
But honestly, it is the best money I ever spent. Yeah. It's a peace of mind to be able to have the paperwork to show, and no court's going to overturn an adoption.
Nobody can take your baby away.
No one can take that. No one can take them away. And that was something that was important for us too. Yeah. If something ever happens to me, you know, people change during grief, you know, so that was important.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're so glad you came to tell this story and so sorry you experienced that, but hopefully sharing this can help some folks at home and actually shed some light on a really serious issue in our country.
The big thing is document. Ask them to document anything they refute. Okay, put that in my record, document it. Make sure you have the documentation.
And you can take pictures of your file. Some people don't know. You can take pictures of your file. You have the right to look in any and all of their files that they bring in. Now, a lot of places are digital, but you can also ask for a copy.
Request.
I didn't know that until recently that you can get all of that information.
I just want to say thank you so much for coming on and sharing this story. This has been really wonderful.
Thank you.
And now we're invested. And now I'm going to meet you in Costa Rica. Where are you going next?
Right?
I'm going to show up at your door.
Can we go? Because you have to stay in touch. You know that now. We're connected.
We're invested.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Whew. That was a story.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
I'm awestruck because I didn't know that was safely possible.
The nomadic life?
The Black queer nomadic life.
Yeah, yeah. And also, I cannot believe that they were so blatantly ignored when their baby was a full month early. Wow. That's some crazy shit.
Yeah.
But thank God everything turned out all right.
So glad they told us the story. I mean,
yes.
You know, I have to say, not just because I'm on this podcast, but I have learned things that I don't know if I would have learned had I not been listening to this most informative podcast with these two amazing hosts. I mean, I'm not
learning so much.
Yeah. That's nomadic, what we're here for. Queer, Black women traveling around the world with their baby. Now I think I can get Aaron to buy into the RV.
Okay, good luck. While you're waiting, why don't you go out and get the book that I wrote with my previous co-host, Robin, called If These Ovaries Could Talk, The Things We've Learned About Making an LGBTQ Family. And y'all should buy it too. It's available at all major retailers. And if you want to buy locally, you should check the Indie Bound. You can also get the audiobook if you want to hear me and Robin read to you at night, because who doesn't? And that's available on Amazon and iTunes. And if you get it, don't be afraid to rate and review it on Amazon or Goodreads, because those help us get that book out even to a broader audience.
Absolutely, because this is content everybody needs to know about. Plus,
everybody,
we have all kinds of merch. Merch is short for merchandise, by the way, everybody who's listening, because there might be older,
I feel like you had to remind yourself that.
You don't only have to wear it in June, because we have Pride when 12 months out of the year. Matter of fact, you should wear it year round. So many designs.
Yes, you should.
And you can put those designs on any product in the store. T-shirts, mugs, mm-hmm. notebooks, face masks, laptop cases, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. So go to the link in our bio on our Instagram page to get to the store. And then go buy mm-hmm. a bunch of stuff.
Go buy a bunch of stuff. You can also go to tpublic.com and look for If These Ovaries Could Talk, and you'll find our merchandise page there as well. Okay, guys, make sure you're following us on all our social media channels. Ovaries Talk on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. We are If These Ovaries Could Talk on YouTube. And you can support the podcast and join our community on Patreon at patreon.com/ovariestalk. And that's where you're going to get that bonus content that we all love so much.
We'd like to once again thank you to our sponsor, Zoller, and a huge thank you to all our Patreons who are helping us make this show. We really appreciate you. We feel like we know you, and we hope you feel that way about us. And we keep growing and expanding our family, our queer family.
Yes. Well, thank you all for tuning in. We'll see you next week, because yeah. we are not stopping.
Facts.
All right. Eggs. Egg. And Helen is not happy about this extended break, but she's gonna work through it.
Yeah, that's why she gets paid the big bucks.
No, she
gets no bucks.
That's no bucks.
No bucks.
Ovaries.
Out.
Out. Out. Out. If these ovaries could talk, they would say,
eggs, ovaries, out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.